Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Orange Kids Podcast, where we take the big ideas of kids ministry and discuss practical solutions to our week-to-week challenges. My name is Mike, and today, as always, I am joined by my friends and fellow co-host, Gina McLean.
How are we doing?
I'm doing well, Gina, and Kellen Moore.
Hello.
Hello. That was a very hello, everybody.
It was a little high-pitchy.
That was a little high.
That's what I do best.
That's what you do. Hi. All right. Well, Gina and Kellen, we are here today because we are going to be talking about something that everybody listening to this podcast, they have to do every single Sunday morning or evening or Wednesday, is the element of large group time, right? So large group time can be a tricky thing because there's a lot of different elements that are involved in large group time. And we want to talk about some ways to help you when it comes to large group time. So in order to do that, we thought we would bring in an expert to help talk about that. And today we have Mike Thiemann. Hello, Mike.
What's going on?
Hello, sir. It's good to have you on this podcast. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Mike Thiemann is our large group director for 252 Kids and Preteen Curriculum here at Orange. And before his time here on our team, he was a large group director and then later the kids director at a very large church in Atlanta, Georgia. So we are thrilled to have Mike here today to share his wisdom and his insight in regards to large group, right? So this is a big topic to kind of jump into.
It's a large topic.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there?
That's on point today, Gina.
Thank you.
Way to go. All right. So it's a very large topic to talk about, many different areas that we could go on. But I kind of wanted to go back and to start this conversation is just to say, when it comes to large group time, sometimes as kidmin leaders, we can look at the time that we have with our kids, whether it's 60 minutes, 65 minutes, for some people out there, 75 minutes, 90 minutes. Ooh. Like there are some people out there that have 2-hour services. So whatever your context is, we can look at the time that we have with our kids and we can just say, okay, I know I need to do a few things here today. I need to like make sure everybody's safe. Like everybody gets returned back to their guardian or parent, whatever it may be. I need to tell a Bible story here and we probably need to sing maybe a song or two, kind of worship song, do that, right? And so we just kind of like go for it kind of a thing. So I wanted to talk about the why behind large group. Like what is the goal of large group time, would you say, as it relates to what we do on a Sunday?
Well, speaking as a large group guy, it's really easy to think of large group as the destination. This is why we've gathered here today, is to hear the Bible story in an engaging way. And that's fantastic. But really, if we're thinking about it in a bigger way, the goal of large group is to set up small group to win. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different, you know, approach to how you program your time.
Got it.
Why is that? Why is it important to set up small groups?
Well, so it's really part of a larger strategy, right?
Okay.
If we view it as I want to get all the kids into a room together, and I want them all to hear the same message, and I want that message to be something that they go home with, that's a good goal. But you can take it a step further when you have kids sitting down in community, in circles with a leader who cares about them,
right?
Where they can talk about, okay, now that I've heard this truth, what does it mean for my life? Like, what can I do with it? And so that changes the way you view large group if all of a sudden everything that you're doing exists to set up, you know, that conversation around a circle.
I love that. And that's something that I don't want us to like just skirt on by, because that's a philosophical shift in looking at your large group. Because the destination is that there's the tendency to think like we have gathered here today to learn a Bible story, right? And we've heard the phrase around here, I think Dan Scott said it, is like the Bible story isn't finished until someone knows what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And the best place to help someone process to know what to do with the Bible story isn't necessarily large group time, right? Because every kid's context is so different. And you as a large group communicator, there's no way that you're going to know the context of every kid who is there in your ministry, right? The best person set up to do that is going to be the ones who know them the best. And that's going to be your small group leaders.
Right. And I think that looking at it that way really plays to the strengths of each environment, because in large group, the strength of that is that you get to really refine your message and you get to say exactly what you want to say in the way that you want to say it. And knowing that every single pair of ears in the room that they're going to hear it. But that also takes some of the pressure and the heavy lifting off of the small group leader, that they don't have to necessarily tell the entire story perfectly. But what they can do is what the storyteller can't do, which is apply it.
Right.
It's good. Yeah. No, I love that, because when you're recruiting, you're going to find people who are like, I don't want to get in front of a stage because I'm scared of people over, you know, anybody, any crowd bigger than 10. No, yeah. Thank you. Like, I don't want to do that. Right. So therefore I can't volunteer in your children's ministry. We're like, well, I don't need you to do that. What I need you to do is to care about kids, and I'm going to give you 8 to 10 kids, and I want you to just pour into your lives. Oh, well, if I don't have to tell the story and all I have to do is to help them apply it, well, that changes things. Then you've got people who are like me, who are probably terrible small group leaders. Like, I'm just confessing that right now. I'm a terrible small group leader, but I feel more comfortable on a platform to be able to engage kids with the story. So it the two environments of large group and small group really do complement each other well, but it starts with the perspective of each of them to say, no, this one, large group, this helps set the table for what only small group can do. I think it's a powerful statement.
Yeah. It's good. And I think as a ministry leader myself, I think what I've been guilty of is assuming that a small group leader sitting in the room understands how the large group experience and how that storyteller on the stage, how what they're doing sets me up. And assuming that the person on the platform, the person on the stage understands what it is that they're trying to set up. So just like what you said, I think I'm guilty of, by not being clear with what the expectations are, then I leave that platform person, that storyteller, to assume that the whole reason why they're gathered there is to hear a Bible story, which is an information transfer, right? We're transferring information, but transformation comes not from receiving information, but transformation comes when you have to wrestle it down and have a conversation about it and figure out how does it apply to your life today?
No, I love it. And information is a part of the transformation, but it's not.
It doesn't terminate on itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And being in environments that think like the way you're saying, Mike, that are programmed that way, it makes my job as a communicator like so specific and so clear that I know when I go out there, my job is to be able to communicate these three things to these kids that I want them to know, that then they are then going to go for the next 30 minutes after they're done with large group time to go and unpack that in a very specific way. And that changes the way that I approach my large group message to do that. So yeah. I love it.
It does. And it really narrows the focus of what you're trying to say in large group.
Yeah.
I think the tendency is to, you know, almost out of desperation, I've got to get as much content here as I possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're really trying to set them up to win in small group, it's different because you want to set them up with something that's super memorable.
Yep.
And something that really is an answer to the question, what did you learn in church today?
Yeah.
You know, that would be amazing if a kid could walk out of your environment and actually tell you the teaching point. But in order to do that, you have to be so locked in, crystal clear on the focus of what you're teaching.
Yep. No, totally. So where I want to maybe take this conversation next is that now that we kind of know what the why of large group and its place in the entire service hour that we have, is putting together an effective large group time that sets small group up in a way that is so successful that they have some meaningful and engaging conversations with the kids in their small groups. So when it comes to a large group time, I feel like sometimes in kids ministry world, we approach a large group time in a way that it's like, okay, I've got to fill the time as opposed to leveraging the time that I do have in an effective way to do that. And so can you talk a little bit about like what that means as far as like just not just filling it with like, here's a song, here's a video, here's this or whatever, but actually being intentional with the time and however much time you do have for a large group, like what are some ways that we can be intentional with that?
Right. Well, you have to think that as a kid coming into the room, like put yourself into the shoes of a second grader. What's the one thing you want? You want to have fun, right?
Yeah.
So when you're coming into the room, you know, that's not really the time to hit kids over the head with the Bible story. That's not necessarily the time to say, hey, let's sing a song together, because that kid is thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that yet. Let me just kind of be here for a minute first. And so I think that if you think of it as a funnel, you know, it's a metaphor that we love. The wide end of the funnel is so important because a kid coming in, whether they've been there a million times or it's their first time, you know, they feel safe, they feel welcome. They can kind of hang back and just observe if they want to, or they can be the one on stage doing the slime game. You know, it gives them options. It allows them to kind of opt in at their own speed without having to immediately, you know, be on, if that makes sense. But you take them from that wide end of the funnel, and all of a sudden, as you move through your production, you've got to think about this strategically, that what do I want them to experience next? If this is all part of a funnel that leads them toward small group, toward that circle, then what's the next piece? Well, worship is a fantastic next piece in that, and that's why it is right after the opening game in many cases, because all of a sudden you are involving the whole room.
Right.
Like, it's great when the game can be an all play, you know, that we love that too. But really, that the moment when it truly becomes an all play is when you have fun songs that you can participate in, and that kind of involves it. It involves the kids in what's happening. And then as you move one step further, you finally have reached the Bible story. Well, by that time, you've kind of earned the kids' buy-in. Mm-hmm. You know, they are glad to be there. They know what's going on. They don't, you know, they're not nervous. Their kind of walls have come down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they're really primed to understand the point of what you're trying to teach, you know, because they feel welcome. They feel like they're part of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're ready to hear that focused teaching. And then really, as you narrow the funnel all the way to the narrowest point, that's when we hand it off to the small group leader.
Yeah. No, I love the illustration of the funnel, because it clearly illustrates the journey that you are taking these kids on. And when you start at the top of the funnel, the wide end of the funnel, that is basically where you are trying to engage them in some way. And again, a great game can involve everybody just like that. It makes everybody feel welcome and you're involved in that. And then you can move into, okay, we got you engaged. We did this fun thing right here. Now we're going to involve you into this, what we're doing here. And that's where worship time comes in. Now, you mentioned worship time. So, you know, questions that I have when I think about large group time, and we get these questions all the time, as far as, like, we know, when I'm planning out my large group time, when it comes to worship, I think you can even think of the funnel in terms of the worship time as well. Because, like, you want to move from your, you know, you did your big game, then you move into your first song, and all of a sudden we're singing Humble Thyself in the Sight of the Lord, right? Like, it's a great song.
Kids ministry song.
Humble thyself. In the rounds, let's go. Gina, take it. But you want to think in terms of that funnel as well, right?
For sure. I mean, it's great to start your worship time with, you know, kind of one of those party songs.
Yeah.
You know, and then gradually move toward something that's a lot more worshipful, for lack of a better word. Different songs have a different tone, right? And so I think that as you are thinking through that, you want to leave kids with something that leaves them ready to experience, you know, the truth of what you're about to teach.
Yeah. When it comes to songs, would you say, I'm just curious to this, like, you know, we get this question sometimes too, is like, how many songs should I be singing, right? Should I be singing five? Should I be singing three? Should I be singing one?
Should I
be singing at all?
I think what's most important to me is where the songs are placed.
Got it.
And, you know, there may be a reason to change things up and move a song around for a specific reason. However, you know, kids are going to thrive on routine.
Right.
And for the reasons we just mentioned, that the place in the funnel, I love putting it between the opener and the story, because it's just the perfect bridge. It gets kids thinking about God. It gets them thinking about faith. It opens them up to the thought that, you know, what they're about to hear is meaningful.
Yeah,
I think. But yeah, I mean, I would say to me, two or three songs, depending on the age group. I mean, younger kids, two is probably great. Older kids, three could be perfect. But honestly, that is a bit more of a subjective. But to me, it's more about where is this positioned.
Yeah. Got it. Got it. So you move from engage, you move to involve, and then you move to the challenge part. And that's where we would unpack the Bible story for that time. So in your experience with large group, again, there are people out there who tell the Bible story live, and there are those who utilize video. Maybe they do a mixture of both. Like, when it comes to any wisdom into, should I use video? Should I do it live? Because there are some people out there, like, when they are the large group, like, it's them, and they'll hop on the mic to sing, and then they'll play the game, and then they'll tell the story, and they'll do all that. Like, thoughts on that?
You know, I would say, again, play to your strength. You don't have to be all things. Like, if you're a great teacher, you don't have to be the host. Like, if you, that could be someone else, you know, and vice versa. Like, I think that the beauty is you could do video or you could do it live, and there are pros and cons of both. You know, I think that what you gain from being in the room with someone who just captivates a room, that you can't substitute for that any other way. But at the same time, with a video, you know, kids are accustomed to engaging with screens in a way that they haven't been even in the past.
Yeah.
And it's very normal for them to engage with content that way. And what I personally love about a video is that it gives you quality control.
Right.
Yeah. And you know that you're saying these words exactly the way you want to say them, which again, if you're thinking about this as setting up small group, I personally love the thought that I know that it's going to be said perfectly, mm-hmm. as perfectly as I can anyway, on a video, because then it makes the conversation a little bit more freeform, if that makes sense. Yeah. If it's live, sure, there are things you can do live that will engage the kids in a way that a video probably never could.
Yeah.
Having said that, you also have to really, really work to have the language just right.
Yeah.
And that takes skill.
Gotcha.
In your opinion or things that you've seen, does large group change if you have a giant stage or if you have a giant room just with a floor? Because I know we have some listeners that they don't have stage, they don't have lights, they don't have all that stuff, but they do have a room.
Sure.
So what does large group look like in that perspective?
Well, it gives you opportunities, obviously, to move around the room. And I love doing that for stories. I think about when we do the Isaac and the Wells, it's kind of like a lesser known story of making peace. But I love it because there's all these different locations. And, you know, to a kid, you think, then they went to this place, then they went to this place. You're like, right. That doesn't mean anything to me. But all of a sudden, if you've attached these places to locations in the room, you can even, depending on the size of your group, you could even have the kids like walk along with you and go to these locations. Mm. And all of a sudden it becomes kind of this, it hits different learning styles. You know, it's all of a sudden I'm experiencing something that, yes, a stage is great because sight lines are great, yeah. and because lighting and, you know, all the reasons why a stage is important. But at the same time, you know, if you're in a gym or something, there are things you can do that others maybe couldn't. Mm-hmm. So it's playing to your strength. It's recognizing what is my environment optimal for, mm-hmm. and then really chasing after that.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, moving through this funnel that you've talked about in terms of engaging kids up front, involving them as far as in the singing time, moving into the challenge time, which is when you would tell the story either live or on video. There's a key thing through all those handoffs, and it's this little word that we don't talk enough about, I think, in ministry as a whole, it's just transitions. Mm-hmm. Transitioning, because if you're going to take kids on a journey, you want to make sure the handoff in between each of those points along the road is a smooth one,
yep.
right? Because if you have a great game, you move into a worship time, even they're like, it takes like a lot of hard work to get kids' attention, and it takes just a few seconds to lose it, and you may not ever get it back again. Yeah, right. So talk to me about the importance of transitions in large group time.
It's one of those little things that can just, you know, almost make or break your experience.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I'll stand in the back of the room and then the worship leader, for example, meaning well, will say something like, "We'll see you guys next week."
Right.
You know,
Every time. And
to the kids, they take that cue as it's over. Like it's confusing. Mm-hmm. It takes you out of the moment, because to the kid, this is just one piece of the strategy that they've been invited into. And so this is where training comes in. This is where making sure your volunteers understand exactly where they fit and why, you know, how their role fits within the larger picture of the funnel. Because that same worship leader could say something to the effect of, "Thanks so much for singing with us. That was so much fun. Hey, Mr. Kellen's got a great story for us in just a second. You don't want to miss it. Have a seat." That's a very different, that moves them from one thing to the next. And it requires that your volunteers understand the other pieces as well.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. I say the same thing with your storyteller, because mm-hmm. I've been in some environments where the storyteller says it. They, you know, like, "All right, we all pray with me," and they pray. "All right, amen. All right, thanks, guys."
See, yeah.
And then that's it. Next week. And there's no clear, like,
sure.
So yeah. What do we do? As opposed to the communicators say, "Isn't that amazing what we learned about today? Hey, today in our small group times, mm-hmm. we're going to unpack this, and I can't wait for you guys to talk about this. Let me pray for us, and then we're going to go to our small group." Like, it's giving them the clear, direct handoff to what's next.
Well, I love, this is a little, you know, I love when in preteen, the approach to preteen especially, where if you can leave them with a question, you know, you leave them curious, and that drives them to sort of this idea of discovering together.
Right.
It leaves them with a question mark. It leaves them wanting more. It leaves them with a bit of a cliffhanger, where we're not buttoning it all up and saying, "Okay, this is what you need to know. You know, see you next week." Like, basically.
Yeah.
That's it's really easy to do that as you are ending your piece. But what really sets you up well is when you can think about what's coming after and kind of cue the kids for that as well.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to the length of your large group time, again, everybody out there has various hours they have to fill, you know, as far as their programming goes, but on a percentage basis, what would you say is something that our leaders, our listeners out there should shoot for when it comes to planning out their service, taking into account registration and, you know, they have, you know, tables and games for kids when they come in and do that. And then we kind of officially start our programming. How much time should be dedicated to large group time, would you say?
I mean, I would start that by thinking about what percentage do I want to have in a circle, you know, and then kind of subtract transition times. If your kids have to travel, if, you know, you're waiting for late kids, like there's so many things that take you out of the moment of that small group time. Like all of a sudden, you know, there's shuffling at the end of the hour. Like I would subtract all of that and say, okay, I want to have, you know, maybe it's 50% of my time in a circle.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 40,
yeah.
You know, when you've done all that. So then what's left? Like, okay, we have 40% of our time in large group. We have 50% of our time. It probably shouldn't be 75% of your time.
Right.
If you really are serious about the kids having a quality conversation later. And so what's great about this is it's just like budgeting anything. You're budgeting the time that you do have wisely. That might mean cutting that third song, you know, that you can make decisions then based on here's the time I have. How do I want to fill it in a strategic way?
Yeah.
The thing I love about that is it goes right back to the very beginning of the conversation where we said the first thing we've got to do is figure out, as far as large group is concerned, what's the win?
Yep.
Why does it exist? What's the win? And when we arrive at that conclusion, which in for us, we believe that the win is a quality conversation in the context of a small group.
Yeah.
And if that's the win, then everything else cascades out from there. So how much time do we have in large group? I love what you said. It's first determining how much time do you want them to have in small group? And then take into consideration time constraints from there. I think it's brilliant because that's not typically our approach.
Right.
Right. Typically our approach is, well, how much time does large group require? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like permissioning and saying, no, you can pare it down so that it fits to meet your needs for your ministry.
Yeah.
If you want small group to win, it just means starting from that point to begin with.
And it helps a storyteller understand why we are not teaching every possible thing we could about that story.
Right.
It's getting that down to an 8-minute version as opposed to the 15-minute full thing.
Yeah. And I think even taking that, you know, what is the win of large group? It's even taking that exercise and doing that for every volunteer position in your large group and small group. So everybody understands how the piece they play in the overall puzzle of what you're trying to do for that morning to do that.
Right.
So it's like you as my communicator, you as my host, you as my game person, you as my small group leader. Here's our specific one sentence little description about our part in this whole thing.
Right. We always call them win statements. And I love that. It's just what is a win for me? And it's a great exercise that you can do today. You can sit down with your roles that you have and the people that are in your ministry and just think, you know, a win for you would be to accomplish this, but make sure your win statement relates to small group. You know, make sure that there's something in there with a storyteller. Present the Bible story in such a way that it sets up conversations with small group. Something like that, you know, just to remind them, even at training, you know, when you get together with them throughout the year, just reminders that what they are doing is not just isolated just to large group.
Yep. You know, things we've been talking about today with the funnel and engaging kids and involving them and challenging them. And there's an element of programming to this. Some of us in kids ministry got into kids ministry because we love Jesus and we love kids. And I don't know the first thing about programming, right? And when you're starting to talk about transitions and making sure we're moving kids along to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing to help small groups win, and I've got other stuff to do in terms of finding small group leaders and registration and budget and I've got, how can I begin to move toward having someone focus just on large group for me, if that makes sense, in terms of like a volunteer role? What would you say to that?
I would say that I firmly believe that every church has people, you know, out there in the main auditorium or wherever it may be, the main service, that have the ability to do this really, really well.
Yeah.
But we haven't asked them. Now, sure, we may put out a general volunteer call where we say we need people to help in kids ministry. But I think there are certain people out there, especially those who are really good administrators, who are really good, you know, that may not respond to that because they think it means I have to be sitting on the ground with a bunch of kids. And I'm not good at that. It's kind of like what you were saying earlier. But there are people out there who, you know, it doesn't require that much technical expertise to do this. If you can run a computer, you can generally pull off, you know, kids large group.
Right.
So there are people out there like students, high school, college students, even middle school students.
Right.
You know, and there are adults out there who do this for a living who are great at leading teams. That if you can think of a specific job for a specific person and make that kind of ask, yep, it's a very different ask.
Yeah, for sure. Because I like what you said, like we generally ask for, I need volunteers in kids ministry. That can mean 100 different things, right? And if I don't like kids, then I ain't. But what you're looking for is even not like, because again, I can sit there and say, I don't like kids that much. I'm not a storyteller, definitely not a small group leader. I don't know how I could serve. Well, actually, I'm looking for, this is a producer role, really. Right. And when we say producing, we're not even saying creatively producing, even though there could be an element to that. Mm-hmm. It's like, I need you to help us make sure that we are doing the things that we need to do in the order we need to do them in the way that it's going to help us get to where we need to go, right?
Taking ownership. Someone who's going to make it their job to make sure that large group goes well,
right,
and the production value is solid, but most of all sets up small group, that is their mission in life. It's great to give that responsibility to someone who you trust,
right,
and that's someone that you have to hand pick,
yeah, right,
but I think they're out there.
Yeah, and it's helping them build that team of people for your large group. Now, if you're just starting, you're not only my producer, you are the team, right? It's like, I need you to lead yourself. And then as we go along the way, you know, it's adding different elements like, hey, I need somebody. We're going to add another tech person into this. And again, when I say tech, I mean PowerPoint, right? Or I mean, turn on the lights, turn off the lights. Mm-hmm. You're my lighting guy, right? Yeah. Or I need you to do this. And so it can grow and evolve, but I don't want people to kind of just get overwhelmed to say, oh, you're talking about a production person. And that means like high tech. It doesn't. It's just focus.
This was one of the things that when I first started my job as a large group production director, my boss challenged me to do, and it seemed impossible.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like where would this producer be? Where would I find such a person? But then I realized quickly that those people were in fact out there, and they were great leaders of people. You know, they know how to create a relational team. Because yes, half of this is technical, but the other half of it is definitely relational. Mm-hmm. And people that want to serve, they want to come back every week because they know that someone knows what's going on in their life and recognizes the service that they provide. You know, we all want to feel like someone noticed that we've done something.
Right.
That whether it's a note in the mail, whether it's just, hey, I saw how you hit that cue during the story. You really anticipated that. That was perfect. The timing was great. We don't need that all the time, but every now and then that producer, having someone in the room whose job it is to only focus specifically on what happens in that large group environment, it pays off in relational ways as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's awesome. Well, this has been insightful for sure. Yeah. Like again, this Sunday, everybody listening to this podcast, we are going to be taking kids on a journey. And as a curriculum organization, we create curriculum. We always say this because there's part of this whole journey we're talking about is dependent on your curriculum, right? Everybody out there has a curriculum, either you're using it, you're writing it, you're whatever, you're doing something. We always say with our curriculum is that you should never just download it and use it as is. The last edit and for our curriculum is you as the ministry leader, because you know your kids better than we do. You know your context better than we do. You know your service hour better than we do. Like, you know what you need to do. And so it's taking the time to look through, if you're using a curriculum, using our curriculum, is to sit down and just say, okay, where do I want to take kids today? This is going to be based on our curriculum. How are we going to do that? Looking at all that and just putting all the pieces together to have an engaging and effective large group time, right?
I agree. And I think a great exercise that you can go through even this week is just to think about your environment through the lens of a first-time guest.
Yeah.
I just think that we can't do this enough. Like we kind of fall into habits.
Yeah.
And that's fine because again, kids enjoy routine and they learn well through routine. But at the same time, it'll help you think in terms of strategy. If you think about what is this like for a kid who's just walking in the doors for the first time, are they going to feel welcome during the game? Are they going to feel involved during worship? Are they going to feel ready to hear that story from scripture? Is it going to be presented in an engaging enough way that it makes it stick? And then do they feel confident enough as they go back into small group that they have something to contribute, that they have thoughts about this topic that are important, and that they can understand again what to do with what they've heard?
That's good. All right. Well, Mike, thanks for hanging out with us today, talking about large group. It's been very beneficial, and it's been great. Thanks, man. Appreciate
it. Time flies. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to our podcast for today. And as always, if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, please subscribe to our podcast, whatever, however you're listening to our podcast. And while you're there, it would be great if you could leave a rating and review. It does help get the word out about the podcast. And if you had a friend who came to mind as you were listening to this, maybe you had a storyteller, maybe you had a host, maybe you have somebody you thought about when you were listening to what Mike was talking about today, please feel free to pass along this episode of our podcast or take them to our website at orangekidmen.com. All right. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with us. And until next time, we will see you later. Kellen, you want to take us out with a special large group ditty?
It's been the Large Kids Men Podcast.
See you next time. Bye.